Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette for today, Thursday, May 25th, 2003. I will be your reader, Ben Stein, and we will go ahead and start here with some hot off the wire, some national news, and then we'll get to some local news. Fitch Ratings warned the nation's AAA rating was under threat as negotiations to raise the debt ceiling continue between House GOP leaders and the White House. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis has entered the 2024 presidential race with an announcement plagued by technical glitches. He's stepping into a crowded Republican primary contest that will test his national appeal as an outspoken cultural conservative and the party's willingness to move on from former President Donald Trump. President Joe Biden and former President Barack Obama were among those paying tribute to Tina Turner following the news of the singer's death. AAA predicts that 37 million Americans will drive at least 50 miles from home this weekend, an increase of more than 2 million from Memorial Day last year, but still below pre-pandemic numbers in 2019. When Russia invaded Ukraine, companies were quick to respond, some announcing they would get out of Russia immediately. More than a year later, it's clear leaving Russia isn't as easy as the first announcements might have been made it seem. The Panthers reached the Stanley Cup Finals thanks to more Matthew Tkachuk heroics. The Rays bounced back from their 20-1 defeat. An 8-run inning was enough for the Orioles, and the Brewers blank the Astros again. Tina Turner has died at age 83. She teamed with husband Ike Turner for a dynamic run of hit records and live shows and survived her horrifying marriage to triumph in middle age with the chart-topping What's Love Got to Do with It? House Speaker Kevin McCarthy says he's sending Republican negotiators to the White House to finish out debt limit talks, but he's warning that the two sides are still far apart as they try to reach a budget deal with President Joe Biden. Lawyers for Donald Trump have asked for a meeting with Attorney General Merrick Garland as the Justice Department investigation into the former president's handling of classified documents shows signs of winding down. Target is removing certain items from its stores and making other changes to its LGBTQ+ merchandise nationwide ahead of Pride Month, after an intense backlash from some customers, including violent confrontations with its workers. Rapper Fetty Wap has been sentenced to 6 years in federal prison for his role in a New York-based drug trafficking scheme. A man walking on tidal mud flats with friends in an Alaska estuary got stuck up to his waist in the quicksand-like silt and drowned as the tide came in before frantic rescuers could extract him. The first double above-the-knee amputee to climb Mount Everest has returned from the mountain, pledging to dedicate the rest of his life to helping people with disabilities. And from that, we'll move on to some of our local news. 13 charts that show jobs, unemployment, and workforce data for Iowa, the Digital Content Center, and there were charts, I would describe them, but they're not actually coming up. So we'll go ahead and skip that, and we'll go to another article here. I apologize. Mason City operations and maintenance crews receive fire hydrant training from Robin McClellan. The city of Mason City has crews from the operation and maintenance department out in the streets for training on the maintenance and repair of fire hydrants. Workers could be seen on 7th Street Northeast making repairs to a hydrant that had been reported as leaking. Fire hydrants are regularly assessed in the city and flushed twice per year in spring and fall. Hydrants operated in freezing weather must be maintained immediately to prevent damage from expanding frozen water. Hydrants can be damaged during maintenance if care is not taken to properly lubricate them and be certain no debris has infiltrated the threads. Fire hydrants use brass fitting that can be easily damaged if mishandled. Citizens are reminded to maintain hydrant areas with good mowing and snow removal practices, never parking in front of a hydrant, and notifying the city immediately if there is an issue. To report a malfunctioning or damaged hydrant, call City Hall at 641-421-3600. Clear Lake man charged with harassment after allegedly flashing a gun, from Matthew Razab. A Clear Lake man was arrested on a warrant on Wednesday for allegedly harassing people and displaying a gun on May 11th. According to court records, 43-year-old Michael Lee Magnin has been charged with first-degree harassment, an aggravated misdemeanor punishable by up to 2 years in prison. The affidavit states that Magnin allegedly followed the victims, who were walking their dog, on his motorized scooter for several blocks while yelling at them. When they stopped walking, a verbal altercation occurred. During the altercation, Magnin allegedly lifted his shirt where a holstered weapon could be seen and said that he was going to shoot them. The altercation occurred around the intersection of 7th Avenue North and 6th Street North in Clear Lake around 4:45 p.m. Magnin posted his $3,000 bond, and an initial appearance is scheduled for May 31st. Magnin has a previous convictions for assault, use display of a weapon, and assault on peace officers. The future is now for Riverhawk Athletics. At the grand opening Tuesday for the Mason City High School's new athletic facilities, there is finally brick and mortar to bask in and behold the fruits of a labor long in the making. The $27 million facilities project relied mainly on SAVE Save revenue bonds, a statewide penny sales tax approved by the district's voters in March of 2020, but the capital campaign dubbed The Future Is Now raised more than $1.4 million to help equip the new facilities. The capital campaign to reinvigorate the campus concluded with an open house and ribbon-cutting ceremony in the new atrium under the bright red letters proudly displaying Mason City High School. The atrium contains ticketing, restroom, and concession areas at the junction of the new fieldhouse with an existing high school gymnasium, and an elevated walkway provides access to the natatorium. Donors to the capital campaign before the ribbon was Catherine Kohler. "Thank you to the voters who approved this project and the many alumni that contributed and donated," Kohler said. "It's an amazing community place. Most importantly, though, the students I've talked to can't believe it was built for them." Jaden Williams, who uses the weight room every day, participating in track and football, says he's impressed, but mostly excited. "There's a huge variety to the machines and the weight room and a lot more space. I'm excited to see it help our sports team." Assistant Superintendent Bridget Exman says the addition of these spaces is a really exciting opportunity to provide this for our students and our student athletes, and it also opened up additional programming in our school day in our physical education programs. The cheer and dance squads can use the multi-purpose room. PE classes can now have more aquatics added to the curriculum, and the impressive field house contains a 200-meter indoor track and three different multi-purpose courts, along with batting cages and a long jump pit. Mason City financial advisor Phil Johnson served as chairperson of the Future Is Now capital campaign and said, "We had 438 contributors from 26 states, so the response, not just from the community, but from alumni all across the nation, was phenomenal, and enabled them to secure what they say is top-notch and the best equipment you will find in the state and even the country right now, according to Principal Dan Long. This is all first-class stuff." The Daktronics video board in the fieldhouse carried a price tag of $315,000, but its top-notch quality is the same technology used in many major league arenas. The Colorado Time system technology that will be used in the natatorium is also top of the line. The goal was to be second to none, according to Long. While a few finishing touches on the facility have to be made before the first events get underway in the fall, athletes have already been using the new indoor track within the fieldhouse as well as the weight room, while the new natatorium's competition pool is expected to be filled sometime in June. The Future Is Now also announced they are expanding their campaign to raise $500,000 for new video boards in the existing gymnasium and football stadium, along with other equipment needs that may arise in the future, with $180,000 of that goal already met. The campaign grants donor tier membership with passes to Riverhawks athletic events. This next article from Robin McClellan, Mason City Veterans Memorial Association presents Memorial Day ceremony. Mason City is gearing up for a weekend of festivities and remembrances. While the 84th North Iowa Band Festival often is an attention grabber, Memorial Day weekend has been celebrated by the Mason City Veterans Memorial Association since 1921. Memorial Day is an occasion to memorialize those who died in U.S. wars. What began as a simple act of laying flowers on the graves of the departed after World War I has become a national celebration of freedom and sacrifice. Sunday, May 28th and Monday, May 29th feature events built around themes of freedom and sacrifice. At noon Sunday, American Legion riders from Albert Lea, Minnesota, will bring an American flag to the Mason City All Vets Center, 1603 South Monroe Avenue, on an early leg of the Patriot Tour. The Patriot Tour is an all-volunteer effort from Patriot Nation, a nonprofit organization dedicated to raising funds for military veterans and their families who are facing financial struggles. The group escorts an American flag across the country for 115 days to raise money. The tour kicks off Saturday. In the seventh year, Mason City has been an official stop on the tour. Flag bearer Denny Rohr and riders from Mason City will escort the flag to its next stop at Zylstra Harley-Davidson in Ames. Kyle Easley has been a part of the ride since the beginning. While he did not serve in the armed forces, he feels a duty to recognize our nation's veterans. Quote, I did have the honor of taking the flag 1 year. It was a very emotional experience and a high honor. The flag ride is a way to raise funds, draw attention, and say thank you to those who gave, Easley said. The Nation of Patriots is a nonprofit, all-volunteer organization, and 100% of the donations go to support veterans in need. Free will donations will be accepted on site or make a donation at www.nationofpatriots.com. Memorial Day services conducted by the Mason City Veterans Memorial Association will be Monday, with assembly at 9:15 a.m. and services beginning at 9:30 a.m. at Elmwood St. Joseph Cemetery, 1224 South Washington Avenue. Activities will include the Mason City High School Concert Band, a vocal performance by Samantha Pang of Newman High School, invocation and benediction by Chaplain Norris Hughes, a Boy Scout reading of the Gettysburg Address, and flag salute. Mayor Bill Schickel will deliver the mayor's proclamation, a reading by Jim Wolf, representing the Sons of Union Veterans of the Civil War, and a wreath-laying ceremony by several patriotic organizations also are planned. The guest speaker will be Leon Christensen. Marine Corps League Associate Member Christensen actively participated in building the Lake Mills Veterans Monument. 8 honor flights to Washington, D.C., Committee to Welcome Home Vietnam Veterans, Operation LZ, Toys for Tots, and the NIAC Foundation. A car caravan will proceed from Elmwood to Memorial Park Cemetery for a brief program with refreshments served after the ceremony at the All Vets Center. Cecil Fohl, president of the All Vets Center Board, invites the public after the ceremony for a light lunch and to tour the newly remodeled facility. The public is always welcome at the All Vets Center, Fohl said. In Clear Lake, a Memorial Day service will begin at 9:30 a.m. Monday at the Seawall. A ceremony at the Clear Lake Municipal Cemetery, located on North 20th Street, will immediately follow with Speaker Eldon Vine, a Korean War veteran, delivering the message. This article from Clark Kaufman of the Iowa Capital Dispatch, entitled Nurse Tells Iowa Inspectors of Horrific Conditions in Des Moines Nursing Home. An Iowa nursing home where residents were deemed to be in immediate jeopardy delivered a horrific level of care, a staff nurse recently told state inspectors. The inspectors visited the Genesis Senior Living Nursing Home in Des Moines last month and investigated a backlog of 9 complaints against the facility. The home, which has roughly 70 residents, was cited for 13 federal violations and 2 state violations, including failure to notify family members of residents' worsening conditions, failure to protect residents from abuse and neglect, failure to investigate or respond to alleged violations, failure to meet quality of care standards, and failure to adequately protect residents from infections. A registered nurse who worked at Genesis Senior Living late last year told state inspectors that one resident had an open wound on her foot in December. The wound, she said, had a horrid odor that she could smell as soon as she entered the woman's room, adding that it smelled like gangrene. According to the inspectors, on December 9th of last year, the nurse had removed from the resident's foot a dressing that had been applied to the wound 8 days earlier. At the time, the wound was noted to be foul-smelling and draining fluid with signs of an infection. An antibiotic was ordered, but 6 weeks later, the woman's condition had grown worse, and a licensed practical nurse reported that by then she could smell the wound from the hallway outside the woman's room. The resident's daughter asked Genesis to take her mother to the hospital. The woman was admitted to the hospital, where doctors assessed her wound as very large, at least 3 inches by 3 inches, with exposed bone that was infected. The woman remained hospitalized for at least 10 weeks, during which she underwent 4 surgeries, including bone grafts. The registered nurse at Genesis said the lack of care the residents in the facility get is why she is no longer an employee, state inspectors wrote in their report. She described the care as horrific. She said when she would arrive to work the night shift, multiple day shift medications were often not given. According to the inspectors, residents of Genesis Senior Living had to complain that the certified nurse aides who worked in the home hid in closets, talked on their personal phones, delivered little care, and were rude and disrespectful. After one resident complained to an aide about the length of time she had waited to have her undergarments changed, the aide threw a pair of briefs and a glove at her, saying, "Effing change yourself," and walked out. The aide was fired for the offense. Residents who were to receive a shower twice a week sometimes had to wait 7 days for a shower. On one occasion, a resident who preferred to have daily showers had to wait 14 days. In January, a female resident fell from a tipped-over mechanical lift, began having seizures, and was rushed to a hospital. In February, a different resident fell from the mechanical lift while being transferred to bed and sustained a head laceration that required a trip to the emergency room and 5 staples to close. Inspectors reviewed 7 patient files and concluded that in 6 of the 7 cases, Genesis Senior Living failed to provide safe mechanical lift transfers for residents. Based on that finding, the home was found to have placed residents in immediate jeopardy from January 9th, the date of the first incident, through April 26th. Fines of $9,500 and $6,250 were imposed by the state, but have been held in suspension to allow the Federal Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services to consider imposing a penalty. In the past 2 years, CMS has fined the home 10 times, with the penalties ranging from $650 to $71,761 based on its 5-star quality scale. CMS has awarded Genesis Senior Living a 1-star rating for state inspectors' findings, a 2-star rating for its staffing levels, and a 3-star rating based on various quality measures. The home's temporary administrator, Cody Petrich, could not be reached for comment. The home is owned by Des Moines Healthcare Management, a for-profit company owned in part by Judah Beanstock of MGM Healthcare, a St. Louis company that manages 7 Iowa nursing homes and 8 facilities in Missouri and Oklahoma. Lawsuit over slippery diving board at Iowa Pool is back on deck following appeal ruling from Jeff Reinitz from Cedar Falls. A lawsuit over an alleged slippery diving board at the Cedar Falls Municipal Pool may resurface following a ruling by the Iowa Court of Appeals. Ron Myers of Waverly took the city of Cedar Falls to court after he slipped on the 16-foot diving board at the Falls Aquatic Center in July 2019. A district court judge sunk the lawsuit when the city argued it was protected through qualified immunity. Myers' attorney appealed, arguing that qualified immunity didn't apply because the slippery diving board was a crime. Iowa's public health code mandates that diving boards and platforms have a slip-resistant surface, and another part of Iowa code dictates that violations of the state's health code are misdemeanor crimes. Governments can't play the qualified immunity card if a crime is involved under Iowa code. City countered, arguing that it installed the slip-resistant board in 2013 and that the code doesn't define how much slip resistance must be maintained to be in compliance. And regular pool inspections by the Blackhawk County Health Department never resulted in warnings or citations about the diving board being slip-prone, the city noted. The Iowa Court of Appeals disagreed in a 7-page ruling issued Wednesday. Quote, "The fact that there is no articulated level of slip resistance that must be maintained does not change the plain language of the rule. The diving board must have a slip-resistant surface. Either the board had a slip-resistant surface or it didn't," said the ruling, written by Judge Paul Ehlers. Whether or not the board was slip-resistant would be a matter for trial, the opinion stated. The ruling sent the case back to district court. And this article just coming up from Aaron Murphy, Lee Gazette. Pence again criticizes Linmar transgender student policy during latest Iowa swing. From Des Moines, flanked by Iowans involved in conservative education movements and the state's attorney general, Mike Pence, former vice president and potential 2024 Republican presidential candidate, once again levied heavy criticism on an eastern Iowa school district's policies for transgender students. During a discussion about parents' rights in education over lunch at an East Village hotel, Pence called the policies of the Linmar Community School District, quote, crazy, and mislabeled them as a gender transition plan. Quote, if a school in the heartland of America where a student would have to come in with a permission slip from their parents to get a Tylenol from the school nurse, but could get a gender transition plan without ever notifying their parents, as I said then, I'll say it again. That's not bad policy. That's crazy, Pence said. Gender transition is the process of changing one's gender identity and can include medical treatments and surgeries. The Linmar policy allows students in the seventh grade or above to request a gender support plan that calls for teachers and peers to address the student by a new name and new pronouns. The policy leaves it up to the students whether to notify parents. The event was hosted by Advancing American Freedom, a nonprofit issue advocacy organization launched by Pence in 2021. The organization filed a legal brief joining a lawsuit against the Linmar policy. Pence has not yet declared whether he will run for president in the 2024 cycle, but Wednesday's event was held in Iowa, where Republicans will again be the first in the nation to cast their presidential preference early next year and feature discussions around education topics central to Republican voters. Pence was joined by Iowa Attorney General Brenna Byrd, Iowans involved with the conservative parents' rights group Moms for Liberty, and advocates for homeschool education. Byrd and Pence gave brief remarks, after which the rest of the meeting was closed to media. I'm so inspired. The first time Advancing American Freedom came to Iowa when we came alongside your group, Moms for Liberty, to join in the battle for parental rights in the Linmar Community Schools case. I've just been deeply inspired, Pence said. All of you represent the very best tradition of Americanism, the willingness to step into the public square to speak with deep conviction on behalf of your values and your families. And I believe that you are going to pave the way to a court decision that will strengthen parental rights for every American family. The event was one of multiple stops Pence made over 2 days in Iowa. He also hosted a meet and greet Tuesday, and on Wednesday visited a private school in suburban Des Moines and hosted a social event in Ottumwa. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis joins crowded Iowa caucus field, this from Caleb McCullough. From Des Moines, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis announced his campaign for president on Wednesday, jumping into an already crowded presidential primary as he seeks to sway Iowa voters ahead of the 2024 caucuses. DeSantis poses the most significant challenge to former President Donald Trump, who currently leads Republican primary polling nationally and in Iowa. But his entry comes after half a dozen other Republicans have entered the race, fracturing the party's anti-Trump bloc and making it more difficult to mount a successful challenge to the former president, said veteran Republican strategist Eric Woolson. Quote, there was all this sense that he and Trump were going to be the two 800-pound gorillas in the race, said Woolson, who has worked on presidential campaigns but is unaffiliated this cycle. And maybe that still happens, but at this point, the Trump campaign has done a very solid job of neutralizing any advantages that Governor DeSantis has. And in the meantime, he's had some missteps that have slowed his momentum considerably. South Carolina Senator Tim Scott also announced his candidacy this week, joining former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley, Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson, biotech entrepreneur Vivek Ramaswamy, and other Republican hopefuls that have been frequent guests in Iowa over the last several months. He paired a campaign video launch with a conversation on Twitter Spaces with the site's billionaire owner Elon Musk, which was delayed close to 30 minutes because of technology issues. The space and the app repeatedly crashed as more than 500,000 people attempted to listen to the conversation. Once the live stream was relaunched, DeSantis pitched his vision for the country, challenging President Joe Biden for bowing to the, quote, woke mob and painting an image of chaos at the southern border and crime in cities. He pointed to his achievements in Florida, citing a low crime rate, low taxes, high marks in education, and a quickly increasing population. He also made the case to Republicans that he is the one to pick in the Republican primary election, neglecting to mention Trump by name. Quote, my pledge to you is this. If you nominate me, you can set your clock to January 20th, 2025 at high noon, he said, because on the west side of the U.S. Capitol, I will be taking the oath of office as the 47th President of the United States. No excuses, I will get the job done. The 44-year-old Florida governor has been laying the groundwork for his campaign for months, embarking on a national book tour and making multiple visits to Iowa this year. In building his national profile, DeSantis has embraced culture war battles and pushed a number of policies in Florida going after so-called woke agendas in education and elsewhere. He's frequently said Florida is, quote, where woke goes to die. Gloria Maza, the chair of the Polk County Republican Party, said a good chunk of Republican voters are still undecided and looking to hear from the field of candidates. Quote, we're all over the board. There's nothing that I can pinpoint to say that DeSantis has tremendous support here, she said. They all have some support of some form. In his opening pitch, Wilson said he expected DeSantis to emphasize the argument that he is, quote, Trump without the drama, something Republicans hesitant to support Trump have said they are looking for. A lot of Republicans have said they want Donald Trump's policies, but they don't want his abrasiveness or drama, he said. And so I think DeSantis is going to be talking about that. DeSantis's opponents have already begun taking shots at the argument. On Wednesday, Haley launched a video comparing DeSantis to Trump with the message, quote, America deserves a choice, not an echo. Trump has frequently attacked DeSantis, saying in a March visit to Davenport he would be very, very bad on ethanol, and accusing him of wanting to make changes to Social Security benefits. Trump-aligned PAC launched an ad last week dubbing him Ron DeSales Tax for backing a fair tax proposal to impose a national sales tax while in Congress. DeSantis regularly takes second place behind Trump in national primary polls, but there is a 30-point gap between the two candidates in 538's polling average that has only widened since March. A May Iowa poll by National Research showed DeSantis with 26% of Republican support, trailing Trump, who polled 44%. In a statement, Democratic National Committee Chair Jamie Harrison said DeSantis has tripled down on a MAGA agenda, pointing to book restrictions and a 6-week abortion ban. If there was any doubt, DeSantis' announcement turns up the volume on an already messy Republican primary, Harrison said. One thing is guaranteed. Whoever makes it out will only have done so by catering to the most MAGA right-wing Republicans in the primary. The announcement comes as a pro-DeSantis PAC, Never Back Down, is planning an organizing blitz in early states, spending at least $200 million to connect with potential voters, according to the New York Times. Any candidate running in Iowa has to have a strong ground game, Wilson said. It's not going to be a matter of any candidate just flying in here, making a few appearances, and relying on star power. They're going to have to work for it. Earlier this month, 37 Iowa legislators, nearly a quarter of state lawmakers, announced their support for DeSantis' expected presidential bid ahead of his most recent visit to the state. Representative John Wills, a Republican from Spirit Lake, and the Speaker pro tempore of the House, was among those lawmakers, and he said he was hoping to hear a forward-looking vision from DeSantis. I think that we've got some candidates in the race right now that are already looking to the past, Will said, and that's what I really like about DeSantis, that he's looking to the future. He's looking to help the United States become successful, get out of where we're at now, and move forward with a bright new beginning. DeSantis's Iowa backers also pointed to the similar legislative agendas between Iowa and Florida, which the Florida governor has also touted in recent visits alongside Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds. Quote, all he has to do is basically keep describing or promoting what he did in Florida and how similar it was to how the Reynolds administration and the legislature handled things in Iowa, said Representative Norlin Momsen, a Republican from DeWitt. And if you like what happened in Iowa, then I think he's the one that can make the United States like Iowa. Iowa police footage in teen's fatal shooting won't be public, panel rules, from the Associated Press from Des Moines. Footage from body cameras Des Moines police officers were wearing when they shot and killed a 16-year-old boy will not be made public, a state panel has ruled. The Iowa Public Information Board ruled May 18th that video of the shooting should be withheld, dismissing a complaint filed by Des Moines TV station KCCI that sought to have the video released. Charante Jenkins was killed in the December 26 shooting in an apartment. Prosecutors have linked his death to a January 23 shooting at the Starts Right Here alternative school in Des Moines that left two teenagers dead and the program's founder injured. Disparaging comments about Jenkins surfaced online following the police shooting, which prosecutors say led Jenkins' half-brother and another teen to kill 16-year-old Rashad Carr and 18-year-old Gianni Dameron. Raven Tukes, 19, and Preston Walls, 18, have been charged with first-degree murder and other counts for the killings. The two will be tried separately later this year. The Iowa Public Information Board dismissed the complaint filed by KCCI-TV reporter James Stratton on the basis of Iowa's juvenile records law, according to the station. City attorneys had previously denied the station's records request filed with the Des Moines Police Department. Stratton argued the video should be released because Jenkins did not enter the criminal justice system and said the department could remove identifying information from the video, according to the Des Moines Register. Three police officers fired more than a dozen times after the boy allegedly pointed a gun at them. Officers were dispatched to the home to respond to a domestic dispute and have said they tried unsuccessfully to de-escalate the situation. The Iowa Attorney General's office determined the officers, quote, acted with legal justification. Campaign Almanac, Tim Scott releases first Iowa TV ad in the 2024 presidential bid from the Lee Gazette Des Moines Bureau. Republican presidential candidate and South Carolina U.S. Senator Tim Scott is releasing his first TV ad, part of more than $6 million ad buy that is airing statewide in Iowa and New Hampshire. Scott formally launched his presidential campaign Monday, offering an optimistic and compassionate message he's hoping will serve as a contrast to the divisive language, combative tone, and grievance-based politics that has shaped the early GOP primary field to date. He travels Wednesday to Sioux City, where he is scheduled to tour a Christian school and hold an evening town hall. He's back in Iowa the following week for Iowa Republican U.S. Senator Joni Ernst's annual Roast and Ride fundraiser. The ad, titled Made in America, focuses on Scott's rise from generational poverty to a high-ranking U.S. politician and presidential contender. Quote, because we chose patriotism over pity and to be victors, not victims, Scott says in the ad. That's why it pains my soul to see the Biden liberals attacking every rung of the ladder that helped me climb, he continues. Indoctrination in our schools, inflation in our economy, crime in our neighborhoods, victimhood in our culture. To the radical left that says we're an evil, declining country, I say the truth of my life disproves your lies. Scott entered the race for president with $22 million cash on hand, the most of any presidential candidate in American history to date. Iowa Republican Governor Kim Reynolds and GOP presidential candidates Perry Johnson and Asa Hutchinson have been added to the lineup for Senator Joni Ernst's June 3rd motorcycle ride, hog roast, and rally in Des Moines. Johnson, a Michigan businessman, and Hutchinson, former Arkansas governor, join a handful of 2024 Republican hopefuls as special guests. Other Republican presidential hopefuls and potential candidates who have said they'll attend are Tim Scott, former Vice President Mike Pence, former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley, Ohio entrepreneur Vivek Ramaswamy, and conservative talk radio host Larry Elder. Iowa is set to kick off the Republican presidential nominating process with its first in-the-nation caucuses. Every potential candidate in the 2024 GOP primary has been invited to the event. Tulsi Gabbard, the former congresswoman from Hawaii who ran for the Democratic presidential nomination in 2020, is headed to Davenport to to headline an Iowa GOP fundraiser. Gabbard, who has since left the Democratic Party and campaigned for Arizona gubernatorial candidate and Donald Trump-endorsed election denier Kari Lake, will be a special guest for a Republican Party of Iowa reception June 16th at Rhythm City Casino Resort. Gabbard, a contributor on Fox News, will join Iowa GOP Chairman Jeff Kaufman for a conversation. Tickets and details are at www.iowagop.org. With that, we'll go ahead and move into our, I believe, only obituary for the day. And this is the obituary for Donald George Phelan of Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. Went to be with his Lord and Savior on May 21st, 2023. He graduated high school in Mason City, Iowa in 1957, then received his Bachelor of Science at Mankato State University in Minnesota. He served our U.S. Army as a commanding officer, 2nd Battalion, until 1966. He was preceded in death by his father, Jack Phelan, mother, Catherine Phelan, and siblings Dick, Dixie, Betty, and Jack Jr. He is survived by sister Peggy Lucas, wife of 57 years, Latha Phelan, and children Krista Tidwell, Thor Phelan, and Nazrin Ryboff, along with numerous grandchildren and great-grandchildren. He was a faithful servant of our Lord and Savior and was a member of Lake City Church. His presence will be greatly missed by his family, friends, and the local community. A memorial service will be held Thursday, May 25th at 1 p.m. at Lake City Church, 6000 North Ramsey Road, Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, 83815. Visit Donald's online memorial at www.englishfuneralchapel.com. We'll go ahead and move to some sports. And here is the Mason City High School Athletics article entitled Public Its First View of New Mason City High School Athletic Facilities. Mason City Schools' new athletic facilities opened its doors Tuesday and offered a glimpse of the variety of benefits to student athletes, coaches, and the community as a whole will receive. After years of proposals, funding, and construction, Mason City now has three new additions to the high school they can call home. The Fieldhouse, Weight Room, and Natatorium offer up-to-date equipment and facilities for the teams of Mason City High School to host events and practices. It's been a really rewarding process just to see it all come together, girls basketball and volleyball coach Kurt Clausen said, to see original designs and the ideas that came from coaches, community members, and athletes. To see the final product done and completed, it's very rewarding for all of us. Clausen is also the co-activities coordinator and said that the plan is to also open the door to opportunities for youth and national tournaments, considering the size of the new pool and field house. Along with the pool is added seating, which can now hold up to 470 spectators. It's going to be unusual for the spectators to be this close, but the view is awesome, head coach of the swim team, Steve Hugo, said. The swim team used to compete at John Adams Middle School, and according to Hugo, most people would end up having to stand during events. Quote, if you got there an hour early, you got to sit on the bleachers, Hugo said. Otherwise, it was standing room only around the pool. Head coach of the boys' basketball team, Nick Trask, mentioned how one of the biggest things for him is being able to now watch all of his team's practice and host games in the same building. The Fieldhouse is capable of holding six basketball games at once. They're going to get better at coaching with all my staff working with all levels, Trask said. It's also really nice because during game days, we have to send three of our teams over to Lincoln across town. So I don't get to watch many of my 9th and 10th grade home games. Now I can walk back and forth to be able to see those. Trask noted that Mason City was the last CIML team to have an auxiliary gym connected to the campus, which was hard for him to believe. The Fieldhouse also features a 6-lane, 200-meter track and space for field events. Head football coach of the Riverhawks, Josh Reuter, explained that the weight room is a total game-changer for all students, not just the athletes. Students can now earn PE credits during the day using the weight room, whereas prior their opportunities were limited. Our kids used to have to come in before school and lift. So we're talking 6 or 6:30 a.m., Reuter said. We've now transitioned to doing this in the school day with something we call performance PE. The weight room is also open for students to use after school and all teams during the summer. And I think we'll move here to some high school baseball. High school baseball, Riverhawks sweep doubleheader against Scarlets from Logan Shanks. For Mason City, the Mason City baseball team continued its undefeated season, picking up two wins against Des Moines East Wednesday, allowing one run through both games. The Riverhawks took the games 10-1 and 10-0. Mason City was unstoppable offensively in front of their home crowd, scoring 10 runs off of 12 hits in their first game of the night, followed by 10 runs off of 11 hits in the second game. Head coach Troy Rude commended his team for all the production they were able to get out of tough situations throughout the night. Quote, lots of clutch, two out hits and two strike hits, lots of battling back when it was a pitcher's count, Rude said. You also saw our athleticism on display. We can steal bases with the best of them. In his last start, senior Ethan Roberts threw a 17 strikeout no-hitter on the road against Clear Lake in the season opener for the Riverhawks. Roberts continued his successful season on the mound and played a huge role offensively during Game 1, pitching six innings and allowing just one run off of four hits. The Nyack commit also drove in four runners, going 3-for-4 with a pair of doubles and a single in Game 1, and reached base again with another single in Game 2. While his second start of the year wasn't as spectacular as his first, Roberts was focused on the end result and not compiling personal stats. Quote, I wasn't really mad about my pitching performance. I'm just glad we got the win, Roberts said. The offense just kind of came together today. In practice, my swing's been feeling good, and today I just put it to use, and it worked out well for me. The starter of the second game for the Riverhawks, junior Braden Baker, also produced a solid performance on the mound, allowing just one hit and three walks through five innings. Senior Caden Tyler started his night with a two-run home run in the first inning of Game 1 and was a player the Riverhawks could count on for a big hit all night long. He drove in six runs between both games, going 4-for-6 with a pair of doubles and a single. Tyler finds a lot of value in his spot in the lineup, especially when Roberts is performing the way he did tonight. Whenever he gets on, I just feel the need to poke it somewhere so he can get somewhere, Tyler said. Just do a job so we can get points on the board or opportunities for some other people to get some RBIs. Rude looks to build off of his team's successful 5-0 start to the season and hopes that it has shaped the momentum of the team moving forward. Anytime you put so much in the win column early on, that builds well for the momentum of our team, Rude said. We knew we had a solid ball club coming in. We had a great offseason. But to have kids have success right away, I think it adds to their confidence level. May City has a quick turnaround with another doubleheader on the road against Marshalltown Thursday night. The Riverhawks swept the season series 4-0 last year against the Bobcats, scoring 55 runs and only giving up 6. Which brings us to another baseball story, this of the coach, Troy Rude. High school roundup, Mason City Rude wins 500th game. The Mason City Riverhawks erased a 4-0 deficit to rally past Hampton Dumont Cal 9-5 Monday in a baseball action at Roosevelt Field. The victory gave head coach Troy Rude his 500th career win. All 500 of his victories have come as head coach with Mason City, and Rude is just the fourth Class 4A coach to win 500 games with just one program. Rude picked up his 400th win in June of 2018. Caden Tyler went 2-for-3 with a home run and four RBIs. Ethan Roberts scored three times and drove in two, while Ethan Miller also had a pair of RBIs. In all, the Riverhawks socked five extra base hits. Four pitchers combined to allow just one hit, as Mason City worked around 10 walks and two hit batters. Jace Birding earned the win, while James Finkelson pitched 2-2-3 innings, allowing one run to earn the save. The Bulldogs had Brody Walden and Tucker Heron each drive in runs. Riceville 12 over Clarksville 2. Andrew Pridgen and Anthony Hauser each drove in three runs to help the Wildcats to victory. Ryder Fair and John O'Donnell each had two RBIs for Riceville additionally. Eagle Grove tops Forest City 4-2. Lake Mills 2, West Hancock nothing. Newman 13 over Osage 3. Clear Lake 8 over West Fork 0. Andrew Theis and Hudson Carney combined to strike out 16 batters as the Lions even their record at 1-1. Theis struck out 10 in four innings of work, allowing just one hit, while Carney allowed no hits and struck out 6 in three innings. Titan Schmidt went 2-for-3 with three RBIs and three runs scored for Clear Lake. Ben Logue also had two hits for the Lions. In softball, Eagle Grove 10 over Forest City 0. Lake Mills tops West Hancock 12-0. Rockford over Nashua Plainfield 13-0. Central Springs 6, St. Ansgar 0. Now to boys soccer. Hampton Dumont Cal 2 over Clear Lake 1. Brian Vasquez Espinoza and Alexis Hernandez each scored as the Bulldogs, 11-5, advanced with a sub-state semifinal win in Clear Lake. Joe Aragon had 16 saves in net for HDC. The Bulldogs will play Webster City 13-1 Thursday in sub-state final in Webster City at 7 p.m. And to girls soccer. The Mays City girls soccer team scored 3 goals in the second half to break away from Des Moines North for a 5-1 victory over the Polar Bears Tuesday to advance to the Class 3A Region 3 championship match. The Riverhawks now will play for a state tournament berth at Johnston Thursday at 7 p.m. The Dragons are 7-0 all time against Mason City, but the two teams have not played each other since 2017. The 16 wins is a school record and is just the fourth winning season since 2011. It is also the second postseason win in the last 3 years for the Riverhawks. They did everything they needed to do to be in it, Mason City head coach Shannon Dykstra said. We had to just be persistent and keep coming in waves, and we knew eventually they would crack. We just needed to make sure we were doing the right things for 80 minutes and be patient about it. It was the second victory over the season over North for Mason City. The Riverhawks used 3 first-half goals to propel themselves past the Polar Bears at North 4-1 on May 2nd. At the end of the tight first half, the Riverhawks were up 2-1 after sophomore Carmen McMorris scored goal number 42 of the season with just over a minute left before halftime. With dominating ball control and physical defense in the second half, Mason City was able to keep the ball away from Des Moines North and scored some insurance goals to secure the victory. And I believe with that, we'll go ahead and begin to close it up today with one last look of our weather for today. The 25th of May, today is Thursday, and the weather is just beginning to load. Today, a mix of clouds and sun, high of 76 degrees, winds east to southeast at 10 to 20 miles an hour. Tonight, clear skies, a low of 44 degrees, winds east to southeast at 10 to 20 miles an hour. Tomorrow, sunny skies, high of 79 degrees, winds southeast at 10 to 15 miles an hour. And that does it for today's reading of the Mason City Globe-Gazette for today, Thursday, May 25th, 2023. I'm your reader, Ben Stein. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thank you for listening. Thank you.
From the Bureau of Economic Geology, this is EarthDate. A decade ago, there were typically 20 earthquakes a year that were large enough to feel in the central and eastern U.S. But in 2015, there were over 1,000 of them. Why? It's mostly because we're pumping more water into the ground. The boom in U.S. oil and gas production over the last decade has brought many more oil wells, which also produce water. Most is naturally occurring in the formation, and some was injected by operators to allow or improve the recovery of oil and gas. In both cases, the water will likely have picked up salt and other minerals from the rock, making it many times saltier than seawater. Operators may re-inject this water to continue to liberate oil and gas. But more often, there's too much to handle. So it's trucked or piped to disposal wells, where it's pumped down into deep saltwater reservoirs. Adding large volumes of wastewater increases the pressure in these rock formations, which can allow natural faults to slip more easily than they normally would, causing earthquakes. To address these quakes, regulators and the petroleum industry are monitoring disposal wells and shutting down those that could cause damaging seismic activity. And they now think that managing wastewater injection more carefully should help. There's still more work to be done, and university research centers, like the Bureau of Economic Geology, are conducting major studies with the aim of minimizing the risk of earthquakes while maintaining the benefits of domestic energy production. For EarthDate, I'm Scott Tinker.
EarthDate is produced by the Bureau of Economic Geology at the University of Texas at Austin, with support from Schlumberger, helping oil and gas companies increase production and efficiency while lowering environmental impact. You can hear more EarthDate stories at earthdate.org.
In the People's Pharmacy Health Headlines, at high doses, nonsteroidal anti-inflammatory drugs like diclofenac, ibuprofen, or naproxen may increase the risk of kidney problems. The study that revealed this used de-identified medical records of more than 750,000 active-duty U.S. Army soldiers. Consequently, these were active young and middle-aged adults. During the time of the study, from 2011 through 2014, nearly 18% of these soldiers got a prescription for 1 to 7 doses of an NSAID pain reliever in a month. Another 16% were prescribed more than 7 doses in a month. Fewer than 1% of these people were subsequently diagnosed with acute or chronic kidney disease. Nevertheless, the rate of kidney trouble was about 20% higher among people who had received high-dose NSAIDs than among those who had taken none. The authors described the increased risk as modest, but statistically significant.
Another class of drugs that can lead to kidney injury is proton pump inhibitors. A data mining initiative of the FDA's Adverse Event Reporting System analyzed kidney-related side effects among 43,000 people who took a drug such as esomeprazole, lansoprazole, or omeprazole. Approximately 8,000 people taking a histamine 2 blocker such as ranitidine or famotidine served as controls, since they take these drugs for similar symptoms. The researchers found that 5.6% of people on PPIs alone had a kidney-related side effect, while only 0.7% of those on H2 blockers did. Chronic kidney disease was 28 times more likely, and acute kidney injury was 4 times more likely among people taking PPIs. While this analysis shows association, not causation, there are previous studies linking PPIs and kidney damage.
There's growing concern about a mysterious infectious disease that has been spreading among the wild deer population for decades. Scientists call it CWD, or chronic wasting disease. Hunters refer to this condition as zombie deer disease. It can also affect elk and moose. The CDC reports that this infectious disease has spread to wildlife in 24 states and 2 Canadian provinces. CWD was first detected in Colorado among captive deer in the 1960s and in the wild deer population in the 1980s. It's now affecting deer in the Midwest, Southwest, and some parts of the East Coast. The disease appears to be caused by a prion infection reminiscent of mad cow disease. An infectious disease expert at the University of Minnesota has warned that hunters who eat contaminated deer meat may eventually develop the human equivalent of chronic wasting disease.
Shoulder replacement surgery is becoming increasingly common. Now researchers writing in the BMJ say that patients should be warned that the risks are higher than originally thought. The investigators reviewed hospital and mortality records in the UK. When men between 50 and 59 have this type of shoulder surgery, 1 in 4 will need further surgery on that shoulder within 5 years. In addition, older people who underwent this kind of surgical procedure experienced high rates of serious adverse events. 1 in 9 older women and 1 in 5 older men had an infection, major blood clot, heart attack or stroke, or died within 3 months. The authors of the study encouraged their colleagues to counsel patients about the risks as well as the benefits of this kind of surgery.
Drug interactions are a serious hazard in hospitals and the community. If patients receive prescriptions for incompatible medications, they can experience severe side effects that may even be life-threatening. Electronic medical records are intended to warn prescribers and pharmacists about potentially dangerous interactions, but many do so indiscriminately. The result is something called alert fatigue. If clinicians receive too many warnings, they may not pay attention to the really important ones. A team at St. Jude Children's Research Hospital reviewed their alert system. They removed unnecessary alerts and provided additional information to the most important ones. After they finished, they tracked clinicians' reactions. Alert overrides dropped by 40%. One important change linked alerts to the patient's laboratory data, making them much more targeted. And that's the health news from the People's Pharmacy this week.